A lot is being asked of people working in schools.
Teachers have more and more things to do.
The shortage of teachers right now, having to fill a lot of holes and wear a lot of hats, it's very difficult.
There are steps you can take to manage stressful times, whether in the classroom or outside of work.
For me personally, I can disconnect by just being outside.
Laughing works a lot.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
Welcome to a special jam-packed edition of Advantage Connors post round one or round half of the Masters, sitting here on a Thursday evening recording with you as always, your co-host Brett Connors. What's up, Pops? What are you doing?
Well, I've had a good day. I mean, I'm watching golf. I got my tennis in. I got to hit a few golf balls, and I'm not feeling too bad. So also a good thing is, brother, we're both solo.
Yeah.
Melina's been out of town for a while. She's been in Sweden with her family. I think you've got another day or two on your own. And your mom's out of town, not so bad hanging with Bogey, our little mini schnauzer, and Stevie, our little stray cat. So just a couple of days on my own's not so bad.
Yeah.
But always good to be with you tonight. So what's on your mind? What can we talk about this week?
Oh, just lots going on, right? It's a bit busy Thursday. We're recording this Thursday. This will come out Friday. Masters is on my mind just because it's hard not to start with that. They didn't finish the first round. They got started late because of the weather. And once they did get going, some guys didn't even tee off till after 4 o'clock or something like that. I think locally 4 or 5 o'clock even.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys didn't finish. But a couple guys at the top, DeChambeau, Bryson, who's missed the cut, I think, the last couple of years, looked pretty good. 7 under, Scottie Scheffler kind of just ho-hums his way around to a 6 under where you're just like, right. Geez, man, this guy can just casually shoot those big numbers. He's going to be tough to beat. And then you got some guys like, Willett, you got Homa's up there at 4 under. Fox, you got Hatton, you got Corey Connors, 2 under. You got a lot of guys at 2 unders. Zalatoris got to 4, fell back to 2. Ludwig's up there, too. Tiger -1. What do you think about that? You see him kind of, lumbering around out there with his beat-up body. What are your thoughts on what you've seen so far?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I'm sure over the last number of years since, all that went down, where he's had those surgeries and, has tried to come back and rehab and all that he's tried to figure out a swing, I guess. It's hard for me to think, but I can compare it to tennis, that if you're, if things aren't working right, moving the way that they worked and moved for so many years when you were young, all of a sudden you got to change all that sometimes that's not so easy.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if it rains? I've been to Augusta, Brett, and I've played Augusta and I've walked Augusta. It's a tough walk. You don't realize the elevation change that's there. And what happens if it gets wet and it's soggy and he's got to walk through that. And, mm-hmm. How's that going to affect his body? I mean, there's a lot of things, but if you're not right, don't play,
right.
It's kind of that thing too,
I think as long as he's under par, he's going to keep walking. I think if he's playing good, it's going to make it a lot easier to hang in there with some of the pain that he's going through. But
yeah, good point.
If he starts getting over par, messing with the cut line or whatever, then those pains become more. But I mean, he's 1 under, and you can see there's just certain guys on this course, Freddie, all past winners, even when they're older, VJ or certain guys will pop up, and when they're way past their quote unquote prime, and still kind of contend or hang in there on this course because it's such a locals course. Like, if you know it and you played it, like Phil and all these guys, that they're going to have a chance just, going through the motions like they've done so many times.
Right. Yeah. It's fun to watch. I mean, I'm watching, guys that, they've been there for, I don't know, what, 20, 25, whatever amount of years. And then you're looking at guys like, that come out and it's their first one, Wyndham Clark. you know, for instance, it's his first Masters, and he's, I don't know, in the top four or five, you know, the world rankings right now, and it's his first Masters. It's kind of interesting, you know, to see how he maneuvers, you know, around the course. You know, sometimes it might be better, you know, that you go in and you just play golf, mm-hmm. and you don't overthink. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's funny that he's never played it before, and he's like a U.S. Open champion. But
just last year.
Yeah, just last year, right.
You know, which was after the Masters. So, you're right.
I think certain games match up to it, you know, like guys who can hit it long and have good hands and can putt. You got to be able to putt, man. Just, man, they're fast. You see they barely touch it and they run. DeChambeau's interesting because remember he took a lot of heat a few years back where he called Augusta like a par 67. He's like, oh, this should play like a par 67, and then went on to like miss the cut, I think, the next 2 years, you know, and then everyone's ripping on him. And so he goes out and shoots 65 today, and he kind of put some space in between him, and then Scheffler caught up later. The guys still have to finish tomorrow. I kind of hate when the rounds get broken up because then the day is different, the conditions are different, the weather might be a little different, but still fun to be watching tomorrow while I'll be producing a little T2. Tune in out there if you're if you want to watch a little Billie Jean King Cup qualifying action, Ukraine versus Romania, baby. Tune into T2.
Ukraine and Romania. Well, you know, that brings up something. That brings up that I saw that came across, my Twitter and a few things, that there's a documentary coming out, I think, isn't there?
Ah, yes, you're right. There's a documentary called Nasty coming out with somebody I think you know pretty well, Mr. Ilya Nastasi documentary. I didn't know this. You didn't tell me about this. Yeah, I'm like watching the preview and I'm like, geez, like weird that they didn't call dad and ask him to be in this. And all of a sudden, boom, like it pops up and there you are. So
yeah, I think I'm in there for like 2.5 seconds, you know, which is perfect.
Yeah. Well, that's in the preview. Are you not in the, where did they interview you for that? Was that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's interesting, Brett. That's not my thing to go and do. I mean, if you're a friend, I'll be happy to do it, but you know, going and having the opportunity, you know, to talk about Nasty, I got into that and I got so animated in talking about him because he's such a friend, and he took me under his wing when I was 15, 16 years old guided me around the tour and, you know, not only on the court, but off the court too. And, you know, I learned a lot from Nasty, you know, some good and some bad. But I learned a lot from him and, you know, his friendship and, you know, playing doubles with him and hanging with him and being able to, you know, sit around with him, you know, when he was at the top of the game, it was pretty amazing, he's 6 years older than I am, and he didn't have to do that. And we were both under the guidance of Bill Reardon, you know, back in, you know, the late 60s and 70s. And I think that had a lot to do with it. But, you know, his friendship and, you know, he's your godfather the way he is, with me and my family and all that was pretty amazing to talk about. But even beyond that, you know, what he did for the game, I mean, you know, there's probably, you know, a lot of criticism, on his documentary, some right and some wrong, the attention and the excitement and what he brought to tennis. I mean, he was the only guy that when he played that the stands were full of players. You know, they wanted to go not only watch his genius, but they wanted to see whatever else they got. You know, that was just a bonus. Mm-hmm. And what he brought to it. And, you know, like I said, you know, we all stepped over the line back then, you know, and you know why? Because we could, you know, and so we took advantage of that. But that's what brought in the crowds and, like it or not, you know, he, you know, every time he played, there wasn't one empty seat in the stands. And you know, and looking back, I mean, you know, I don't see him much anymore. I talk to him once or twice a year and you know, try to stay in touch, you know, but, you know, our lives have changed, you know, a lot over the last, you know, 25 or 30 years. And you know, but, you know, the memories that I have with him and his friendship and you know, a lot of the things that we went through back in the day is, you know, still lingers in my mind. I hope it's successful because he's, you know, he deserves a lot of good things to, you know, that he was a part of back in the day. You know, everybody tends to remember the shit that happens, you know, but the good things that he brought into it and what he brought to the game and all that should be remembered even more so. So that it was fun to, you know, to be a part of that with him or for him.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks really cool. The poster is really funny. Yeah, it seems like he's one of those kind of quote unquote polarizing figures who's become more polarizing as like times have changed. Like, I'm guessing, you know, back before, you know, Me Too and all these different things, like people looked at the world differently, obviously in the 70s and then obviously times do change and things happen and all that stuff. But, you know, back in the day, he was a ladies man, you know, all the dudes loved him, you know, wanted to watch him play and you know, copy him with the ladies and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it couldn't have been
well,
too bad.
He had a reputation on and off the court. I will say that. And I say that with fondness and you know, hanging with him and, you know, back then you have to remember, you know, things were different. You know, we didn't have a roof and, you know, if you know, we played, you know, in stadiums that only had one court. So you might be playing a match at, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And, you know, so what do you do after that? You go try to find a restaurant and get something to eat. And, you know, before you know it, it's 4 or 5 in the morning. So, you know, the hang with him was, you know, was beyond fun.
Yeah.
He wasn't much for, you know, for sitting around and talking tennis. He didn't want that, you know, practicing, you know, we'd go out and I'd say, okay, I'll meet you at 12 o'clock to practice. And, you know, we'd go out for 5 or 10 minutes, and he says, you know, Connors boy, I've had enough. I practiced enough. I send you somebody else out. You know, I mean, he was a beyond talent. You know, and I say, you know, I always said that, you know, he was born in a pair of tennis shorts and he played like it and you know, was exciting. So, I know I talk about it, but going back, Bretter, you know, he was beyond a friend and you know, it got me through a lot of things back in the day. And you know, I miss seeing him a lot. I miss seeing him. He was a good buddy.
Yeah. On the short list of people we made when we started this, he's on it. So we'd still want to get him on the pod, hopefully, before we call it quit someday. And man, I remember he had that great apartment up the street from where we'd stay on what was it? Park Avenue.
Yeah. We'd stay at the Regency Hotel.
We'd stay at the Regency and he was what, 4 or 5 blocks up to the left.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, walking.
Yeah,
up there
we go
and
up and we do, you know, do our laundry and hang with him and go out and have dinners, with his family. And yeah, it was good days. And you know, I always say that, you know, I miss those days, and I do. I don't think I could handle them anymore, as time has gone on. But it sure was a great experience.
Yeah, Uncle Nasty, the laundry connection when you're in town for the U.S. Open. Who knew?
Yeah, who would ever think? Yeah, but he wasn't doing it.
No. We would go over and do it. That was the fun part, because then you got to hang with him and Aunt Alex and you know, and all that.
Yeah.
So,
it was great.
It's good to see him getting some recognition, just because what a character. Like, it seems like, you know, Vitas could use a documentary too. I know we did the one for Tennis Channel back in 2010, and, you know, that was cool, but I feel like you could do like an even kind of bigger one with a little more, you know, the content that you'd want to do for a more mature audience if you really wanted to.
Right.
But maybe someday. All right, let's move on to where do you want to go next? How about did you see about OJ?
OJ. I did see that. That kind of took me by surprise, Brett, because, you know, during football season, on Twitter, OJ would come up and you know, say things about, you know, some of the games, especially, you know, Buffalo when they were playing, because he was, you know, a Buffalo Bill. And, you know, we're talking about O.J. Simpson, who, you know, has passed away from cancer.
Right.
You know, so, you know, it's they kept that awfully quiet.
Yeah, I didn't even know.
I know you do a lot of reading, and I do, you know, a lot of reading also in the middle of the night. And you know, I never saw anything about that. And
rushing for 2,000 yards.
I knew him. I did some commercials with him. I did a Hertz commercial with him and so forth. But, you know, comes the trial of the century, you know, that it's been called. And he got acquitted from that. And then, you know, getting in trouble in Las Vegas with trying to get back some of his memorabilia and spending time in prison. And, you know, I mean, it's been
crazy.
You know, well, crazy. Right. I don't know. There's a lot of other words that might define that better. But, you know, crazy is a good start.
Right. Well, I mean, do you remember you knew him? And then do you remember when you turned 40 after your run at the U.S. Open the next year? You turned 40 during the U.S. Open and Nuprin, because you were doing the Nuprin, Nupit with Nuprin commercials.
Right.
And Nuprin threw you your 40th birthday party in New York, in Manhattan somewhere. And O.J. Yeah. was there. I remember right. seeing him and like going like, oh, you know, I want to go get a football signed by him. This is in like 1992. This is like 3 years before all the, you know, the murders and all that stuff. And then weren't you like supposed to play like golf with him in like one of the days surrounding like all that stuff or something like that? And then you canceled or something happened where like you didn't end up golfing with him.
Yeah, we didn't end up. We did a charity event and on the way out, you know, we had a conversation. You know, we talked about golf and, you know, let's get together and try to play sometime. And, you know, that never came about.
You know, crazy. Right. Just as someone my age, I was like, what was I, 15? When the verdict came down, and just that time and place. If you ever watched the OJ documentary that ESPN did, it's like a 5-part documentary. They go into like huge depth on it, and I think it won an right. Oscar. It kind of deserved it because it just, boy, did you learn a lot. Like you kind of knew the you know, on the surface stuff you knew about what the news taught you, but then this went really deep. And yeah, man, just like, you know, with the Rodney King stuff and then, you know, all the riots after that, it just has a lot of history balled up in that event. So it's just when he dies, it was surprising because you're like, oh shit. Like, you don't really think about him. I don't think about him much. Like, you see him talking fantasy football and shit. Like, you're right, during the football season. But then, right. You know, just to hear that he died, you're like, oh shit. It's like, you know, one of these people that's kind of big in like pop culture these last 50 years. And it's like, you know, they're gone.
Right. Well, so.
How about we move on to something else? I think, you know how like when somebody gets put in the Hall of Fame, there's normally like a 5-year waiting period, you know, like they retire and then 5 years later, you know, right. they can be eligible to go in the Hall of Fame. I think we have our first contestant who's eligible to skip the 5-year window and go straight to the Degenerate Gamblers Hall of Fame with my man Ipe Mizuhara. More the guy mm-hmm. with the Shohei Ohtani, the interpreter. Yep. More news has broken just today or yesterday, and it's crazy. Have you seen this? Supposedly Ohtani is the complete victim in all of this. Updating last time, we didn't know there was conspiracies and all this stuff. So they're saying he's completely the victim. This guy made 19,000 bets over Jeez. A 3-year oh period, God. 3.5-year period.
Oh my God.
His average bet was like 13 grand. The range of bets was 160,000 as the most and $10 as the least. I got to know what the $10 bet was.
Right.
Here's where it gets nuts. Total losing bets, $183 million. He won $140 million. His net losses were almost $41 million.
Well, you got to remember that if you lose, you got to pay the VIG too, you know. Right?
Right. Yeah, is he charging him like interest on that debt too? Like it's.
Oh my God. And then, is that on the guy that's making $200,000 or $300,000 a year?
Right. And then well, here's the quote. This was in the text. This is what the interpreter sent the bookie. He said, "I'm terrible at this sports betting thing, huh? LOL."
And then this is the this is the quote that's kind of weird to me in the text. And he said, "Can you bump me again?" Meaning like give me a bigger, more credit, you know, because he just kept, was losing. And then he says, "As you know, you don't have to worry about me not paying!" Exclamation point! Exclamation point! And that one's
I'm
a little weird. Yeah, that's a little weird. Like you're good for it. Like you're just good for millions and hundreds of millions of dollars worth. That's over $300 million in bets.
You gotta respect the guy. He wasn't puckering.
it's like 25 bets a day, right?
And then my God. That is unbelievable. And didn't it come out that he had stolen X amount of millions from Ohtani? Isn't that how it came out?
Well, last time we spoke, it was $4.5 million that we thought. Now it comes out it's $16+ million in transfers. And like he was doing things like they have his voice, like he would, you know, like you call and you say, "Hey, transfer $500,000 to this address, right, to this account," and right. then they're gonna call and try and verify. So they would call, and then he would intercept the call and pretend to be Ohtani, and then like say, "Yeah, it's okay," give personal information, probably social security or whatever, all that stuff, and then they would okay all these transfers. Crazy to think that you don't notice $16 million going missing, even if it is spread out over time.
You know, Brett, I mean, in today's times, you know, these guys are talking about so much money I think it was Ohtani just signed a $700 million contract. Is that?
Yeah.
I think I'm about right there.
Yep.
That's incredible. That's an incredible amount of money to. I look at that in the sports, and you know, for me to see that, you know, I tried to bring, you know, that kind of money into tennis, and you know, and you know, hopefully it's come along nothing like that, but you know, that's amazing, you know. So I wonder, you know, who's keeping track of that for him,
right? Like I don't know.
Does he have an accountant? Does he have a manager? Does he have, you know, maybe the, you know, who knows? Maybe the manager's scamming too. Who knows?
Right. That's what I'd have to look at everything if I was Ohtani. I'd be like triple checking all my stuff now.
Well, for sure.
Crazy part is they say he didn't bet on baseball, right? Which is amazing because what you're telling me is he had total discipline to not bet on baseball. He was so disciplined that even though he went down millions of dollars, he never went like, "I'm going to bet on the thing that I actually have inside knowledge of."
Which he was the closest to, right?
Right. But then he didn't have any discipline in the fact that he's a complete gambling degenerate and just got down $40 million. So like on one hand, good discipline. On the other, not so much.
Well, you know, listen, you got to admit the guy's got balls. Yeah, you know, if he's bet, you know, 300 and something million dollars, on sports activity,
right?
You know, you got to put him in the, you know, in the gambling Hall of Fame
for sure. That's what I'm saying.
Don't you?
I mean, what a story. I mean, if this is really what it is, I mean, people are still going to have their doubts, and it does seem a little weird. To like, because like every time he would ask for more credit, this dude is just like, he had to know research on him. Like the book, he had to be like, know who this guy is. You're not going to take all these bets right. and not have some information on the people you're taking the bets from. So he had to know, like, this guy doesn't make millions of dollars a year, but he's quote unquote good for it. Like he says in the text. So like, what is it that the bookie must know that makes him quote unquote good for it?
I'm going to be, excited to read the outcome of what's going on there and how that's handled and by who, or is it by whom?
Right. I mean, the thing I guess we're all rooting for is that Ohtani is just like gullible and is being super taken advantage of by the people around him. You know, you don't want to believe that he's any part of it. You want to just, but then that's a bad thing too, to think that his like best friend these last handful of years, you know, has been literally stealing tens of millions of dollars from him. And then like one of the tweets or texts, or not tweets, texts that they saw between him was like, "Oh, I'm trying like soccer. Isn't this fun? Ha ha ha. Like I'm trying soccer. I lost on UCLA." And you're like, whoa, you're betting like college soccer? You know, like, like this guy was just betting on just anything. Like he didn't understand the ramifications. I don't know, but it's a crazy story.
Nothing like betting on something you don't know anything about.
With other people's money. It's easy to
With other people's money. Yeah. Oh, my. Oh, boy. That's well, funny. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. That's I don't think that's over. I think there's a lot more to that story, don't you?
Yeah, I do, too. I do, too. They don't want there to be, but, you know, they're going to try and just make it like. But then this means this guy's going to have to go to prison for like 30 years because it's like huge. That's major, major fraud on like so many levels, like impersonating, identity theft. And like, you know, that's kind of crazy. So,
well, I'm watching.
Yep.
I'll be tuning into that. If you're up reading and you see something, make sure you get it to me.
OK.
Let me know what's up.
I will.
Keep me posted.
Everybody wants to eat stress-free. And when it comes to Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, that's just what you're going to get. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, that's what I like, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 different options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, Vegan, and veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons that they have every week. I like this. I like my snacks. I like all the other kind of goodies you can get along with main meals. Like they got breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, beverages to help you stay fueled up. They got little shots of vitamin juice, anything you need to get you going. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up on your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-go meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. That's what I hate. I hate the cleaning up. I love cooking. I like the making, and I like reveling in the happiness of how good the food is, but cleaning up is not my bag. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Tailored to your schedule, customize your weekly meals with the flexibility you get, as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. I like that too for people who travel like me a lot. It's good that you can just pause it and then start it back up when you're home. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Here we go, guys. All you got to do as listeners of this podcast is head to factormeals.com/Connors50 and use code Connors50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off the next box. That's code Connors50 at factormeals.com/Connors50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off the next box while your subscription is active.
Did you see about this? I know we've talked about it a little bit, but this was breaking news about a week ago. The WTA finals will take place in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, the next 3 years, 24 through 26. The agreement with the Saudi Tennis Federation will offer record prize money of over 15 million at the 2024 finals, and with further increases the next 2 years. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, from golf to tennis.
A lot is being asked of people working in schools.
Teachers have more and more things to do.
The shortage of teachers right now, you know, having to fill a lot of holes and wear a lot of hats, it's very difficult.
There are steps you can take to manage stressful times, whether in the classroom or outside of work.
For me personally, I can disconnect by just being outside.
Laughing works a lot.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
You know, individual sports, right?
Right.
I think is a big part of it. And isn't it funny how, you know, money makes for strange belt bills. I mean, we've said that before to come in and to, you know, want to, you know, take over, you know, and be a big part of, a reputation change. You know, and to you know, show the good and to, you know, throw money into, you know, sports and tennis and golf. And then, I mean, what am I supposed to sit here and say, you know, you shouldn't do that. You know, I mean, these kids are out working their ass off trying to make a living and, you know, make more money. And if they're willing to put the money in, you know, like I said, you know, a lot of things are thrown out the window once the money comes in. Right.
Yeah, definitely. It just, you know, it's I saw Roddick on his podcast was saying something where it's like, you know, I get it at the end of the day, money, you know, we all know money at the end of the day kind of wins out. But then it's a weird thing because, you know, over how many years is WTA preaching all these kind of like, you know, inclusion and, you know, all these things and, you know, women's rights and all the things they kind of should be preaching, you know, and then for them to sign this deal with a, you know, a place that doesn't maybe have the same belief systems as they are projecting these last few years, you know, I don't know, insert word here that you want to call it, but it just, just wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if how that is handled and if there's any changes made on both sides, and how it's handled and if there's any demands, you know, put on one side or the other and how that's handled and, you know, how it's talked about and so forth. That's another story, I'd like to follow. You know, if it's in the women's, you know, it's going to get in the men's.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, you know, they kind of had the one deal already with like the rankings, you know, like they're the title sponsor for the rankings. So we talked a little bit about that, but not as much. This is like a big deal with the finals. That's, you know, it's kind of a big deal. So,
yeah. It's the end of the year. And it's, you know, that's one, that's like a grand slam, isn't it? Considered.
I mean, you know, it's pretty close. I mean, that's a lot of money when you think that the finals only have eight players, you know, 15 million, you know, that's a lot of money to sprinkle over eight people. So,
right.
Well, we'll have to see how it goes. Yeah. We'll just see how it goes. Do you think that they, nah, never mind. It's all good.
So sometimes it's better to move on.
I'm going to move on. Just go over this quick. Just I want to give a little love. Daniel Collins won again last week. And just wanted
like
to
seeing that.
Like seeing that. And then Ben Shelton beat Francis Tiafoe in Houston. So that was kind of cool. All-American final. Shelton is now the number one American. He passed up Taylor Fritz, who lost early in Monte Carlo and had a lot of points to defend. And so now Shelton is like the number one American.
Well, that's real youth, right? I mean, how old is he? 20, 21 years old, something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see.
Yeah. So, you know, that's real youth. And you know, he's a big
21.
He's got a big game. And
21, yeah. 21, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's big and strong. He's got a big game, and you know, for him to win on clay is you know, for him now he's got some confidence. You know, is he going to go to Europe? Is he playing Monte Carlo? Is he going to play the clay? You know, leading up to the French Open, and you know, it's going to be interesting to you know to see the next you know couple months. You know, getting into the French and through the French, and then through to Wimbledon, which you know I would think his game, you know, is more suited for the Wimbledon conditions, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, that's the part of it I like is seeing him win on the clay, just to see his, like, evolution as a player. Like, you know, how good can he be on this surface? You know, with he's got the big serve, the big ground strokes. He's fast. He's always very aggressive. Like, he's always attacking. And so it's just fun to see, you know, him win Houston. And just, he's not playing Monte Carlo because he couldn't, because he had to play Houston final. And, like, because it's a shorter – Monte Carlo's kind of in, like, 9 days. They start on the weekend. But he might be playing Madrid or, you know, one of the other tournaments later on. So we'll have to see. And then Collins –
that'd be interesting to see if he plays Madrid, because Madrid's in the altitude, little altitude there.
Yeah, you think he'd like you know, that.
Yeah, you think so. It'd be a little faster you know, if he was able to win in Houston, you know, a little faster conditions might even benefit even more. So mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see. And then, you know, once you get to the French, you know, it's a totally different, totally different feel. So, I think the next a couple months on clay, whatever it does for him, it's going to get him in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing for sure. Yeah, if he can get in there and get stuck in and play some matches and have some success, you know, as he has shown that he had in Houston, but then going to the grass, that's you know, I think these next couple of months, that's where it's going to, you know, he's going to reach the pinnacle if he looks after himself in his game and so forth, where you know, it's the conditions are a little bit different, maybe a little bit quicker, and you know, time for him to shine there. So might be a good opportunity for him.
Yeah, be fun to watch his progression through the summer, and just because I think that's like a big question. No one knows. Like, it seems like his ceiling could be pretty high, you know, but we don't know. He's still kind of, you know, going through all of this for the first like year and a half of being on tour full time. So. All right, you want to answer a few questions and then get out of here?
Sure. Yeah, I always like to hear what our listeners have on their mind. I love doing that.
I like this one just because I had never really thought about it. We always talk about it. But do you remember the last match that you played with the T2000? Like, do you remember? Because I know you stopped playing with it, tried to go to the, you know, bigger racket, and then went back to it. But do you remember, hey, there was a match where I was like, I can't do it anymore. You know, blank, I'm going to the Slazenger or whatever it was that you went to and never went back.
Let's see. I'm trying to think, because I have, when things happened here in Montecito, where we had the fires and we had, you know, the mudslides and all that happened, I think it was 5 or 6 years ago, the last 10 rackets that I played with, that I actually played with, in the tournament, I wrapped up and took those with me, and I'm pretty sure that it was like 1986 or something, maybe Memphis in 1986, something like that, or somewhere around there, because the sticker, I could go back and look, but I don't want to unwrap them. They're all nice and cozy right now, but I'm pretty sure it's 1986. You know, and basically, you know, Brett, I was getting older, and I was, you know, everybody started going to the oversized rackets, and I was giving up way, way too much space. You know, guys could, you know, run the ball around the rim and still, you know, come out with a, you know, with a good shot with all the topspin and so forth. And, you know, so I had to try to go to something, a little bigger, and that would help me a little bit too, because, you know, getting older, I was, you know, not getting there as quick and having hit the ball, you know, right in the center of the racket and, you know, and going through all that, you know, was getting a little bit too much. So I'm pretty sure that it was Memphis in 1986, but if you really want to know, I'll go unwrap them and check it out. But they're pretty cozy right now. Leave them alone.
Leave them alone.
I think that's the best.
I'll take your word for it. What do you think it compares to? Because it's kind of ridiculous that you the first time you quit it, you had probably played with it too long, and then you went back to it, you know, and played with it for a while. Do you think that was almost like a guy, you know, playing with persimmon, you know, drivers and woods, when like then it went on to like metal, or like when it went on to titanium or oversized or something, and then the guy you're with persimmon is still somehow making semifinals or like, you know, top fours in grand slams with this like old equipment?
Yeah, I mean, I was losing it every time I went out there. I mean, I was, you know, it was just too much on me. But, you know, I couldn't find anything that I really liked, you know, because I was used to, you know, such a fast racket. You know, the T2000 was so fast, and, you know, it did so much and fit my game so well that, you know, everything else was, you know, too stiff, and, you know, it took too much work for me to play with it. And, you know, the different materials that it was made of, ceramic or, you know, whatever, from whatever company that was out there, you know, I really couldn't find anything, you know, that fit me, you know, until towards the end. So I really played for, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, my career with a broomstick, you know, it felt like. And because I couldn't get comfortable with a racket until I got on and started the senior tour, and I went to that racket I played with more or less on that was the Prince Mono, because it was a single throat, and it was Our friend Bill Lelly, who traveled with me and was a great friend of ours, you know, for years and years since I was a kid, you know, did so many good things to that racket. He added weight to it. He lengthened it and, you know, really made it fit my game as the T2000 did. So I kind of, you know, wish I'd have had that racket, you know, towards the end of my major tour career. But, it certainly, the Prince Model certainly did serve me well, on the senior tour. It was, and to be honest with you, Brett, that racket's like 30 something years old and I still play with it. I have four rackets now that I play with, and I have four rackets that are brand new. And when I go through those, my tennis days are over.
Then you're done.
Hopefully that's not for a while, because I'm enjoying hitting a few balls as often as I can. But once I go through that racket, those rackets, I think I'll be about done.
Yeah, the badminton racket, as people online like to call it, because of the single throat. That racket did win matches on the ATP Tour. I think most people think you only played with it on the senior tour. But if you remember, when you and I flew over to Halle in 1995, and you made the quarterfinals there as an old man, your 40s, around the age I am now, to be honest. You were playing with the Prince Mono on grass there and won a couple matches.
Right. It took a bit of getting used to, but as the T2000, the Prince Mono, you had to know how to string it, and how to string it to fit your game. I was pretty lucky with that. I experimented and eventually figured it out, but, it was a fast racket, a trampoline effect. It had, when it would come off of there, it would fly off of there, and it didn't take the amount of effort. I think that's why, as I got older, it kind of fit my game, because it didn't take that much effort. Once I got it started, I weighted it and it was kind of like an extension of my arm. And
was it similar to the T2000 a little bit?
Yeah. Only a bigger face, bigger head.
So that was like the racket you wish you had in like 1984 or something, when you originally went away from it or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, in 86, 87, 88, 89, I mean, I was still playing some good tennis in those days. I was in, the quarters of, in my later years, I was in the quarters and semis and of Wimbledon in 87, and still playing some pretty darn good tennis back in those days. I was spoiled. I started using that T2000 and I thought I would, play forever with that and end my career with that. But, once all that oversized materials came in, made a lot of players, maybe better than they should have been.
Right.
I mean, should I say that? I don't care.
I think people get it, though.
Call me out on it. I don't care. but it certainly, gave, it was a bigger sweet spot and, allowed, a lot of different shots to happen. And hey, that's progress. I wasn't so much for progress. If I would have, I'd have probably, gotten into it and tried to figure it out a little bit earlier. But yeah, it all works out. Yeah. Not a problem.
Worked out all right. How about this one? I like this one. Brett, love the podcast you do with your dad. Don't follow. I would like you to ask him if he remembers, of course, Mel Purcell from back in the day. I'm from Kentucky, and Mel is a tennis legend here. Mel told me the story about how your dad hustled him at backhand. I would love to hear the story.
Now, I mean, is that just a bad reputation I've gotten here? Mel sounds about right. And still is a buddy. I mean, I think if I haven't seen Mel for a lot of years and since the senior tour days. But I think if I would run into Mel, we'd pick up right where we left off. We were friends and he played the senior tour with, myself and Borg and Vilas and Clark and Lloyd and Dibbs and, all the guys that played. And he was, he was amazing on the court because, you know, he was a bit younger, but, you know, and still in good shape. But even more so, he was so fun, you know, to go into, you know, the cocktail parties with the sponsors and do the clinics and you know, and the pro-ams and you know, with the sponsors and the wives and so forth. And he was an amazing part of the senior tour. I miss him. I mean, we had some fun in the old days playing some matches and the senior tour, but he's always a good guy and, you know, fit in and, you know, was always there to, you know, to do whatever necessary to help make the senior tour successful. And really good guy.
Yeah.
And a friend.
Yeah. If anybody out there is in touch with him, he'd be another guy that'd be great to have on the pod.
He'd have a few stories.
Definitely. Or you got, you're not getting away from that backhammon story yet. Let me just talk. I remember Mel from the summers because I would come on tour with you on the senior tour. And then, like, you were a genius putting all these tournaments at like really nice golf clubs too. So if you guys weren't playing tennis, you guys were probably on the golf course, and I played a lot of rounds with Mel. And do you remember we had a saying because Mel was playing in front of us in a foursome, and one of us hit up, and, like, you know, he was walking over to the tee on the next hole, and it was right there by the green, and someone pushed it, and I think it was you went like, you know, like, watch it, Melvin, like, just yelled out, like, watch it, Melvin. And yeah, like that goofy, like, saying ended up becoming like, watch it, Melvin, like, for the rest of the summer on the tour.
It became a part of the tour. I think, you know, Vitas would always play with us and Mel. And you know, it was interesting back then, Brett, on the senior tour, because, you know, when we got the sponsors, a lot of the sponsors, the guys wanted to play golf and the ladies wanted to do the clinics and the pro-ams and things. So, you know, we had to kind of split up and say, okay, who wants to learn how to play golf and who wants to stick with the tennis? And, you know, so, you know, Mel could do both. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he could play golf and tennis I had to learn to play golf. John Lloyd had to learn to play golf. Vitas had to learn to play golf, you know, so, you know, to keep the sponsors happy. Mel was amazing. If you're listening, whoever sent that in, if you're listening, give Mel our best and tell him to call in and let us know how he's doing. Be good to hear from him.
All right. Now tell me the backgammon story.
Well, the backgammon story was in Canton, China, and I was going there, and I stopped in Hong Kong on the way, and spent the night, and so I said, you know, I don't know much about it. It's my first time there, so I want to go buy a big suitcase, and I want to go get some of my own food, and take some of my own food over there. And so I did that and got a big suitcase and, you know, I filled it full of everything. And so that's what I would play for. You know, you guys would say, I'll come in, I'll play you for a spam sandwich.
Or like peanut butter.
Yeah, peanut butter. I had peanut butter and I had everything. And you know, you walk in my room and it was like a deli, you know, but Mel would come in and we'd play backgammon and hang and kind of chill. And he was always fun. He was a good hang and he fit into everything, Brad. He could play golf. He could play, you know, he played tennis. He could play backgammon. He could play gin. He could play everything. So he was a real good hang.
Yeah. And I think he was for a while the coach at his alma mater, Murray State. For a while, I think that's right.
Yeah, well, I think for a long time because I think his dad was there even
right
before him.
Right, that's right.
You know, for forever.
Yeah,
so he took over there. So yeah, they got a legacy there in Kentucky.
You brought food to Canton, China. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say there was probably some pretty good local food there too. If you wandered out to the restaurants,
I'm not saying there wasn't. I'm just saying just in case.
Right, I know. That's one of the smartest things ever.
I had a very very sensitive digestive system back in those days.
Yeah, the old pack a tin of peanut butter and bread. It will get you a long way when you're traveling, just wherever it is.
Oh yeah. Oh so. Yeah. I think, what else you got?
You tell me what else you want to talk about.
Well, we got the Masters and what's going on there. And I'm kind of excited to see how the weather is going to be. You know, if it's going to rain
up.
Or if there's going to be a lot of wind blowing and how that's going to, you know, affect, you know, the outcome in the way a lot of the players, especially those in the lead play, because, you know, when you're trying to catch up, you got to take chances. But right. It's going to be interesting to see how the leaders play if the weather changes. And, you know, and also, you know, I want to say it again, it's a tough walk. you know, a lot of elevation changes and, you know, going and I was listening to somebody, I can't remember who it was on the telecast. They said that when he played there, it's the best he's, you know, he ever slept on tour, you know, because of all they had to do to get around the golf course, you know, the elevation change mm-hmm. and the, you know, playing the mental part of it, the physical part of it and everything. So you come home and you're worn out. So getting up and the next day and, you know, getting up and being ready to go and play is going to be interesting to see how a lot of these guys handle it, especially the new guys that are there for the first time or the second time. So going to be a fun, three days. And you know, my TV's on nonstop. I'll be, you know, watching it even at 3 o'clock in the morning, the replay. So
I like it.
Going to be fun to watch.
I like it. It should be fun to talk about next week. We'll wrap it up. I think we'll stop there. What do you think? I'm going to take Bella. She's sitting here staring at me like she wants to go out, maybe go to the park. She's been a trooper this last week or so with all the work and everything. I've been, she hasn't been going out as much as she's used to. So she's been the MVP for her dad lately.
Well, you still got some daylight down there. Take advantage of it and take her out and you got your girl coming home tomorrow. Melina's coming home and I know you've had a 3 week break. So, it's either long enough or not long enough.
Right.
So, either way, but, it'll be good. And give her a hug for us when you see her. Take Bella and, you know, you can always follow me, you know, at Jimmy Connors on Twitter. And you at Brett_ on Twitter.
Woo-hoo.
Follow us at Advantage Connors, our podcast, and keep those questions coming. Love hearing, you know, from all those who are a part of what we do and listen to us. And, you know, happy to answer anything you got on your mind.
Yep. We love the interaction. Leave us a review or a 5-star review. And we'll check in with you next week, maybe with a special guest. Peace.
Oh.
A supportive work environment can help everyone working in schools stay resilient.
Just finding people that can reassure me that I'm doing my best and that there are people out there who understand me and can help me through these situations.
You are not alone.
Leaning on each other, colleagues in education is essential. You have to.
We take care of one another.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. That's cdcfoundation.org/how right now.